Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, as we do on Fridays, we're talking about the economic news of the week. There's been a lot that's been going on this week, especially in terms of some of the business rescue revelations around the aviation industries, and we have some economic indicators that have started to come out, and also just questioning the ability of the state to collect revenue. Now, to help us to unpack some of these issues, we are joined on the line by Davi Root. He is no stranger to the Business Day Spotlight, and he is an economist from the Efficient Group. Davi, hi, how are you?
Always wonderful talking to you. I'm much better than the country. Thank you.
No. Thank you so much for joining us for today. I guess starting off with one of the more headline-grabbing news of the week, that's this issue around Comair going into business rescue, and a lot of people, whether it's unions, economists, just coming out to talk about how the aviation industry has been impacted and may likely continue to be impacted by COVID-19 and the various lockdowns. What's your take on this issue?
Yeah, well, obviously, I think the aviation industry is going to go through an extreme. They are already going through a very, very difficult time, and it's likely to last for quite some time. And the reason for that is simple, is that people are going, everybody is cutting back. And once the lockdown we passed and we threw this lockdown, people, when things start returning to normality, flying is certainly not going to be the first priority. The first priority will be other things. Like, for example, making sure that your credit cards are paid and you're looking after the school kids, the school fees and stuff like that. So flat-screen TVs, motor cars and flying is certainly going to be very far down the line in terms of priority. But the really interesting thing for me here is that if you contrast the way that South African Airways, the business rescue of South African Airways is managed, and the business rescue of Comair, those are two completely different things. In the case of South African Airways, it's clear that the politicians think that they're still in charge. I must tell you, I'm glad I'm not the business rescuer at South African Airways, because I wouldn't know what to do because of all this political interference. Now, contrast that to what's happening at Comair, and I think that's the way to do things. And that's the reason why you have something called a business rescue, because obviously this is a very well-run company. Obviously, this is extraordinary circumstances. And once we're through this, chances are very good that they will be able to make it again and will be able to fly again and will have a profitable and well-run company again, unlike South African Airways. So I think the difference here is really stark. There's a huge difference between the motivation behind business rescue of these two organizations or businesses, and also the practical implementation of the business rescue. Comair is doing it the right way. South African Airways is doing it the wrong way.
Now, there's been a lot of talk around what's going on at SAA, what's going on, what does the Comair business rescue actually mean? And you have, you know, the speculation that government is using these opportunities to make sure that people don't fly, as put a more of a stranglehold on private aviation, so that at some point, if they do want to start a new airline, they can go and perhaps buy assets on the cheap. Is there any credence to any of these things, or are people just shooting the breeze at the moment?
Yeah, I think that sounds a little bit like conspiracy theories. I think what is certainly happening here is that we have political leaders that are ideologically very, very firmly left of the political spectrum. They believe they can do things better than the private sector. They have this, let me use the word, stupid idea that the state should have an airline. It has been a complete disaster. I mean, they've had 10 or 11 turnaround plans at South African Airways. I just cannot understand how long it will take before our political leaders understand. But airlines they're not good at airlines. But I guess, you know, the conspiracy theory that they're trying to make use of this opportunity to get rid of the competition, and in order to be able to launch a revitalized South African Airways, I don't really buy that. I think even if there's no competition around, they will still make a mess of South African Airways.
Okay. Now, one of the things, when it comes to these issues is, that issue of bailouts and the issue of the state supporting an entity like SAA. But it seems from what the SARS Revenue Service Commission is saying, that SARS's ability to collect revenue on behalf of the state is going to be impeded this year. Where are we looking on that front?
Yeah, they are. So we can spend literally hours on this specific question. A couple of things, maybe just a few comments. We're not allowed to smoke and we're not allowed to drink. And we do know, for instance, that we've had a bit of a, especially a tobacco smuggling problem in South Africa previously. And I think what is happening now is that if you take out legal traders, you are creating this an amazing, wonderful opportunity for the illegal guys to establish their businesses. And once we're out of this lockdown or lockout, then of course it's going to be very difficult, much more difficult to get rid of these illegal guys. This is actually an opportunity for them to establish their businesses, the illegal guys, properly. And in the meantime, the state is losing really billions of rands in terms of the so-called sin taxes. But that's not only that. Of course, the economy is slowing down. We're talking about the economy growing or contracting by 10% or more this year. And in the meantime, because of that, state revenue, I'm not only talking about the sin taxes, but many other kinds of state revenue, particularly the big ones, like, for example, personal income taxes and value-added taxes and corporate taxes, those collections are under tremendous pressure. And it's quite possible that we can see a total tax collection, a total revenue of the state collecting around about 25% less than original budgeted for. In the budget of the Minister of Finance, and that's only 2 3 months ago. And in terms of rands and cents, that is nearly 300 billion rand. Those are the estimates of Treasury. Now, I concur with that. My estimates is also an under collection in the region of approximately 300 billion or so. So, what we had previously is an estimation, the minister's estimates on the fiscal deficit of close to 7% of GDP, plus 300 billion under collection in revenue now. Will give you a fiscal deficit closer to 10% of GDP, plus an additional 200 or maybe 300 billion extra state spending will give you a fiscal deficit of around about 12, 13% of GDP, plus an economy that's contracting to the tune of about 10% or so. So probably talking about a fiscal deficit this year in the region of more than 15% of GDP. Now imagine borrowing every year between 15 and 20% relative to the size of your economy, and additional borrowing, if you add that to your existing high pile of state debt. So I'm afraid, because of under collection and revenue and spending much, much more than originally planned, and a very weak economy, it's very, very clear that we were in trouble previously because of the mismanagement of the fiscal accounts. Now we are in crisis. The fiscal accounts are in crisis. And we are, I'm afraid, very, very quickly approaching something that is called the fiscal debt trap. And unless we really take some very, very difficult political and economic decisions to turn this around, I'm afraid, I see very difficult times ahead for us.
Now, I guess on that particular front, I'd love to get your thoughts because you are highlighting this increasing deficit issue or the mounting pressure that on that, 15 to 20%. But on the stimulus that was announced by the government a few weeks ago, that 500 billion rand, and we're hearing that about 370 billion rand has to be sourced from elsewhere, 130 being reappropriated or sort of recategorized from the existing budget. And at the time, we said the stimulus is going to be about 10% of GDP, etc. But if the government is only able to collect 75% of what had been initially projected, what does that do? What type of implications does that have for that stimulus that the government is trying to pump into the economy?
Yeah, again, you're touching on a couple of issues here. The first one is that although they're talking about the stimulus of 500 billion, it certainly is not a stimulus of 500 billion. You're right. Some spending will be reprioritized, and there's a 200 billion that will be a guarantee to the banks. That's not a stimulus. The only real stimulus will probably be in the region of about 200 billion or even less. So that's, we can talk about the stimulus, certainly not of 10% of the economy. We're talking about actual stimulus in the region of much less than 5% of the economy. At least it's something, but it's certainly not 10% of the economy. And the reason why we can't stimulate the economy more, I mean, the big economies and the healthy economies, they're stimulating 20, 30% of their economies by way of various packages that they've announced. So we can't do that because we were in trouble before the before Corona or BC already. So the fiscal accounts were completely unsustainable, like I've mentioned earlier, because of mismanagement earlier. So this is not a real big stimulus. We should have been unable to do it because simply cannot afford it. But where's the money going to come from? And I know everybody's talking about one thing is the IMF or a similar sort of institution, a bailout from them. I disagree with that. And the simple reason is that if you talk about borrowing money from the IMF as an example, you must first ask the question, so what do I want to buy with dollars? Because that's what you're going to borrow. You're mostly going to borrow dollars. And if we borrow, and I know we can borrow easily 100 or even more billion rand from the IMF. We've got those lines available. But if we borrow 100 billion rands worth of dollars from the IMF, what are you going to buy with that? You can import, and that's the plan, by the way, approximately 20 billion and so in medical equipment. But what else? Because that's not our issue. We don't need to import something and pay it in terms of dollars. What we need in South Africa, we need rands. That's the issue. In fact, the South African Reserve Bank's got dollars reserves in excess of $50 billion. That's more than enough to pay off existing foreign denominated loans and imports and so on. So that's not our issue. What we need in South Africa is rands. And that's why I'm very concerned about things like, for example, a huge tax increases, and we can discuss that. What sort of taxes can be increased in future? We're talking about there's a possibility of a wealth tax. I don't think that's going to be implemented. It's going to be very impractical to do that. And what else then? Is prescribed assets really on the table? Are we going to see this topic popping up all the time? And I think, yes, that is something that's certainly going to be considered, the so-called prescribed assets. But yeah, to summarize it all, we are in serious deep trouble as far as the fiscal accounts are concerned. And inevitably, what it means is that somehow we will have to get the money, and there are only two real sources. The one is the taxpayer, and the other one is the sailor.
And then I guess going forward from there, given the bleak outlook that you've just given on the state of affairs in South Africa at the moment, some of the complaints that were being had in the economics fraternity over the last couple of weeks is that economic data was going to take a bit longer to actually start being filtered out and for people to start really counting the costs of what's been going on. But I understand that you have certain numbers that have recently started being given out, like your purchasing managers index and stuff like that. Can you give us a sense of what's going on that front?
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. So economists are revising their estimates on growth all the time. I mean, you ask me in the morning, you ask me in the afternoon for my estimates, and I'm going to give you two different numbers. My estimates at the moment is a contraction of 10% or more for this year. I don't think real economic data, of course, it's always important, but it's become less important in the current environment. Because I think whether the economy is going to contract by 10% or 15%, it's, of course, there's a big difference. But the point is, the economy is in a very, very deep and a prolonged recession. That's the point. So if somebody asks you how are things, the answer is simply it's really, really bad for South Africa. But so, yes, it's important to get that economic data. There are some interesting numbers that are coming out. For example, I've seen the Reserve Bank buying about 11 billion rands worth of state debt in the secondary market. That is in April. In May, or rather in March, it was 1 billion, now it's 11 billion. So clearly the Reserve Bank is there. That's one set of economic numbers, but it's not no surprise. We expected that. So you mentioned the Purchasing Managers Index. That is down. If you look at the sub-indices, some of them are down at record lows. And again, we can discuss that. The point is, it's bad. That's what that tells us. And then some other actual real numbers, like, for example, the motor car sales, which completely collapsed in April. Those are actual real numbers telling us The demand in the economy is under tremendous pressure. And unlike the previous crisis in 2008, what is happening today is that we have a crisis on the demand side or the consumption side of the economy, but at the same time we have a crisis on the supply side or the production side of the economy. I've got a suspicion over the next couple of months we're going to get more and more data, and economists are, to be honest, really in the dark here, because I'm trying to make estimates and I can't find a similar sort of situation in the past that I can use as an example to base my calculations on. So I don't know what is going to happen. What I do know is that we are in very, very deep trouble. My preliminary estimates are something in the region of 10 or 15% contraction. We're talking about 2-3 million people losing jobs. We're talking about many, many thousands of businesses closing down. We're talking about a huge increase in unemployment and poverty with that, and social tension and political tension and all that. So whether we're talking about, you know, how deep we are in trouble, it really doesn't matter. I think what is important is that we are in serious, serious trouble. And I'm not always sure that our political leadership appreciates the damage that is being done by this lockdown. And maybe just a comment, something that I have done, a calculation that I have done. And that is that the single biggest killer in the world is poverty. If you put all these bad things like cancer and all sort of pestilence and all sort of other illnesses, if you put everything together, poverty kills more people than all those other bad things do together. The South African life expectancy is around about 20 years, rather about 60 years, while that of the Europeans is around about 80 years. There's a 20 years difference. And the reason is because they are wealthier. That's it. They are simply wealthier. And this increase in poverty, which will be inevitable now, is probably going to kill far more people than the virus is going to kill in South Africa. So there are a set of numbers. To give you exact and specific numbers, I'm afraid I just can't do that, because I've never experienced this sort of crisis that we are currently experiencing in the country.
Now, Davi, as we end off, because you are highlighting a number of issues, and especially on the poverty front, and you're saying that it's one of the single biggest killers of people around the world, I think the COVID-19 crisis has sort of brought about, at least in my view, a more compassionate form of economics. Whether it's out of necessity or whether people are really feeling the pinch or wanting to empathize and sympathize with people, it seems that governments and businesses around the world are trying their bit to either help people, whether it's in the form of debt relief, unemployment benefits, stuff like that. So as we end off the discussion, I'm keen to hear your thoughts around this issue of universal basic incomes. You know, is that something that really that could be a possible panacea to the issue that you've just come from highlighting? Or do we need to find some other solution to address some of the poverty that is really a big problem in the world?
Yeah, we've made announcements on we increased the various grants, and we also introduced something like similar to a basic income grant for people that are not being, they do not get support somewhere else. And I'm afraid once you do that, you can't turn that around. You can't cut back on the child support grant. So I think this is something that's going to be with us going forward, and we will have to find the money for that. Your point about people being more compassionate, I absolutely agree with that. Even on a micro level where I am, I know my company is getting involved in all sort of things where we try to help you as much as we possibly can. I know even on a personal level, even where I stay, my local community where I stay, everybody certainly is getting involved in this. And that's right. It's right. And I think people naturally want to assist other people. And it's the right thing to do. And I believe we should keep on doing that. But I've got two major concerns and two things that, as an economist and as a boring economist, that I need to highlight. And we have to be aware of these two sort of things. The first one is that South Africa is a poor country. It is impossible, it is simply impossible for the state to spend so much money on everybody. That is just a reality. We simply cannot afford this huge, we couldn't afford this massive state like what we had in the past. And it is absolutely inevitable that we will We will have to make a plan to get more money. And the only way we can get more money is to get this economy to grow. We must grow the economy. That must be our first and the most important priority. We have to grow this economy because that's the only way and the only sustainable way through which we can really reduce poverty. Wealth reduces poverty and nothing else. Not redistribution, wealth. Wealth creation reduces poverty. And the second point I want to make that I'm also very, very concerned about. Yes, politicians are getting involved. Yes, they're making all sort of announcements like what we've done in South Africa. And also, yes, politicians are becoming very, very powerful because they decide whether we can buy hot chicken or cold chicken or not. And the point I want to make here is that politicians in future, we're going to get a bigger state now. And unfortunately, we still will have a very inefficient and a very incompetent state. But we will also have bureaucrats and politicians with much, much more power. Because of the circumstances, and I'm afraid they're not going to give that power back once we return to normality. So yeah, I think what we are heading for is a bigger state that is still going to be very incompetent and inefficient, and I'm afraid it's probably going to see much more political interference and more power to the politicians, and this can get to real very, very horrible extremes. I absolutely take the point that we all have to work together to reduce poverty, but the only way that I believe that we can sustainably reduce poverty is through economic growth. Unfortunately, I don't think the politicians see it in the same light.
So that was us with Dovie Root, just highlighting the fact that the only way to really help to eradicate poverty in the country is through wealth creation, and that's only going to happen if we grow the economy. So that's been it. He is just saying that, just highlighting the economic news of the week, starting off with what's been going on in aviation with Comair and South African Airways together, because Comair recently announced the fact that they are now getting into business rescue. He was just highlighting the differences between Comair's business rescue versus what's been going on at South African Airways, and then also the state's ability to collect revenue through the South African Revenue Service has been impeded. We saw that coming out the other day, and it's a very big issue. And Darby's just saying that this is one of the indicators that will that they will be watching, and it's likely that we're going to see a 15 to 20% shortfall in terms of the deficit that's there. And then just ending off, highlighting that it's very hard to give any precise outlook, especially on the numbers front, because no one actually really has gauged what's going on in the economy.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Now, from the discussion we've just had, there are two things that really stick out at me. The first one being what's going on in the aviation sector, because with Comair, for example, like what Darby said, it's been very interesting to see the difference between the two business rescues. At least with Comair, it's less than a few days old by now, so it, we wait to see what is going to happen. But I guess it also highlights how the business rescue process for SAA has sort of been muddied a lot with all of this political interference that's been going on. But more than anything else, it just also highlights that the tourism sector, and I think the airline industry, is just one part that gives an indication of what's going on in the tourism sector. The fact that people can't be moving around the way that they are is actually pretty bad. And when you see an industry like that starting to fall off, because it's not only Comair, it's not only SAA, there are the airlines also feeling the pinch. It highlights that, one, people aren't moving around, but it also makes you then start thinking about the rest of that supply chain. When you think about airports themselves, imagine the guys that are there to wrap your bags, right? It might be 80 rand to wrap your bag in that plastic that they do, but right now a lot of those people aren't making an income. Right now you have car hiring services, you have hotels, you know, all of those stores, all of those businesses that rely on people moving around. It just highlights the fact that a lot of those businesses aren't doing well. Airlines are just big because they have big numbers, big budgets. They make a lot of money, but along the way, there are a lot of untold stories that we aren't hearing about. And then the other one is just previously on the Business Day Spotlight, we have spoken about what's going on in the alcohol industry, what the ban has done to that industry. But I think it also comes on a full circle when you hear about SARS not being able to collect a lot of revenue just based on sin taxes when it comes to cigarettes, for example, or from alcohol producers, that they're losing a big chunk of money that would otherwise have gone to the state, that the state would have been able to use to administer their various different programs. So it's very, I don't use the dire because I always use the word dire, but it's bleak. I think that's a more apt word to use. And just all of these things just highlight what we mean about the interconnectedness of an economy. That if you make one decision in one area, like such as stopping the sale of alcohol and cigarettes, it's not that you're just stopping the people that consume those products from having them, but rather that there's a knock-on effect. You have companies not being able to fully employ their people. Perhaps in the case of the alcohol industry, they get to change their business to produce pure alcohol for sanitizing, for example. A lot of them aren't making foreign currency because they aren't exporting anymore. At the same time, the state isn't able to collect tax revenues. It's a vicious cycle. So that's been it. We hope that you have enjoyed this show. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.